Mrs. Eddy, Her Life, Her Work, and Her Place in History by Hugh Studdard Kennedy. Foreword by Clarissa Hale Studdard Kennedy. Truth or Tradition? A straightforward and factual account of one of history's most colorful characters? Or another excursion into calculated fiction? Immediately, the biographer lifts his pen to write the life story of Mary Baker Eddy. He is confronted with two urgently sponsored but conflicting versions of Mrs. Eddy. There is the first sly, then violent demand for the legendary creature of ecclesiasticism, painted from a palette of disclosure, suppression, and distortion to represent an oracular but pale non-entity. Then there is thrust upon him, by her avowed and unavowed detractors, a villainous, made equally repellent by a different admixture of the same colors of disclosure, suppression, and distortion. The clamor raised by these contenders is so great as to divert attention almost entirely from the long-recognized need for an unslanted record of the extraordinary figure that was the real Mrs. Eddy, one that will place her in true historical perspective, and one that will live because of its authenticity. All biographies of Mrs. Eddy, as my husband, the late Hugh A. Studdard Kennedy, has observed, have hitherto been put out by the church as propaganda in defense of Mrs. Eddy, or they have been vicious attacks on her by her antagonists. Why not relate the whole story quite simply, as in the case of any important character, and let the facts speak for themselves? I have always felt it was something very like presumption on our part to attempt to steady the arc of Mrs. Eddy's life story by suppression of relevant information, especially in the face of her public proclamation that nothing has occurred in my life's experiences which, if correctly narrated and understood, could injure me. As far back as 1914, when he set sail from England to become foreign editor of the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, there was, close to Mr. Kennedy's heart, the desire to write a genuine portrait, one so untainted by either apology or recrimination as to win the respect and interest of Christian scientists and non-Christian scientists alike. But years were to slip by before he felt ready to undertake the monumental task. It was not until the fall of 1938 that the work began in earnest. Convinced that such a book could go out with the goodwill of all concerned, Mr. Kennedy confided his vision to his friend, Mr. William P. McKenzie, chairman of the board of directors of the Mother Church. Now is the time for collating of fact and the retiring of falsehood, Mr. McKenzie was to write enthusiastically. And whenever you come here, you will be welcomed and have any help we can give. An interview with the board on October 10, 1938, served to highlight the need for total independence from official pressure and partisan considerations for the historian. In short, the demand for absolute integrity of authorship. When Mr. William P. Rathvon asked, "To what extent will you have us interested?" Mr. Kennedy replied, I think it would be a most dangerous thing for the success of the book if you had anything to do with it. I think this has been the charge against all the books, the biographies of Mrs. Eddy. They have been procured books for a purpose. I want your help and approval, your advice and recommendations, and I am eager to give the fullest consideration to anything you have to say. But I must safeguard my book from any suggestion that it has been written to order or is in any sense at any point dictated or procured. It may be asked why the board was consulted at all. The vast archives of the Mother Church, the first Church of Christ Scientist in Boston, contain most every document of importance relating to the life and work of its founder, Mrs. Eddy, either in original or facsimile. Mr. Kennedy felt that the custodians of this treasure in historical material would hardly expect him to make bricks without straw, especially when the only sufferer would be Mrs. Eddy's memory. And he entertained the sanguine hope that they would welcome an opportunity to correct from their data any historical inaccuracies which might arise. About this time, there came into Mr. Kennedy's hands authenticated copies of all the documents and other records of which was attested by Judge Clifford P. Smith, Editor, Bureau of History and Records of the Mother Church, official representative of the board, and generally conceded authority on the incidents of Mrs. Eddy's long life and the development of her organization. In his letter to Mr. Kennedy of December 1, 1938, he states categorically that the source material in question, even in most of its detail, is authentic, and that the Mother Church has most of the documents which are quoted therein. Thus, it became possible to do the book independently of officialdom, yet without sacrificing the advantages of officialdom's resources. The lengthy manuscript was completed by the fall of 1939, and copies were submitted for comment to several whose opinions were highly valued. To Mr. Mackenzie, the author wrote, "I place great emphasis on the obstacles which Mrs. Eddy had to overcome in establishing her great work, for I want quite definitely to get away from the dangerous pseudo-serenity which pervaded some previous biographies. The net effect of such an attitude as theirs, as I am sure you will agree, is to present Mrs. Eddy not as one like Jesus, tempted in all things like as we are, but as a being that never was in earth or heaven, and so affording the ordinary human no points of sympathy or contact. To me, Mrs. Eddy is nowhere more vivid in her claim to what men call grandeur than in just this, the way she rode the storm. I come back to it again and again. If there was any lingering doubt as to the fairness of the biographer, who would bring right out into the open the pertinent facts with nothing at all withheld, it was dispelled by Mr. Mackenzie's response on reading the manuscript. I think the strongest feeling that is in our minds is that of gratitude. It would take too many words to express our feeling, and so I will say no more at present. I am sure there is a place for the work of a friend to our leader who writes from the standpoint of observation evaluation, and goodwill. The propriety of discussing the sensational charges leveled against Mrs. Eddy by her detractors, and of telling frankly the whole story of the fascinating and significant Quimby controversy, received the unqualified endorsement of Lord Lothian, who will be remembered as the British ambassador to the United States and a preeminent Christian Scientist. In a letter dated June 14, 1940, he stated his reaction to the book. "I think I have read all the hostile lives of Mrs. Eddy, and I have always thought, as you have done, that they ought to be answered, or at any rate that a biographer should take into account what they have alleged and deal with it indirectly, if not directly. These hostile books are the mine from which opponents of Christian Science and of Mrs. Eddy are going to dig out their material for decades to come, and it is essential that there should be in existence and available a satisfying answer. That, I suppose, is why I enjoyed reading your book so much. It is by far the best account that I have yet read of what one might call the human aspect of Mrs. Eddy's life." The answer to the question of what the book might mean to the all-important outsider, the impartial non-Christian Scientist, was indicated by Mr. Constant Huntington, president of Putnam's in London, the publisher who had undertaken to issue the work abroad. "I want to tell you that I continued to enjoy my reading of the book to the end, and when I had finished it, I felt that you had achieved what we both set out to do. Throughout the work, you have consistently kept yourself in the background and let the facts of the life of Mrs. Eddy speak for themselves. This is a great achievement." Lastly, the manuscript was submitted for expert editing to Mr. Arthur Corey, who is perhaps the best qualified authority today on the life and work of Mrs. Eddy and the history of her movement because of his access to and familiarity with an unmatched wealth of source material. And what is of infinitely more consequence, because of his clearly judicial attitude on the subject. The only major point which Mr. Kennedy's book does not discuss, Mr. Corey writes, is the widely publicized charge that Mrs. Eddy was guilty of frequent plagiarism. However, I am inclined to agree with the author that this is a somewhat extraneous matter, bearing little, if at all, upon the basic trend of her life and the attainment of her goal. There has never been a writer of moment, apparently, who has not made generous use, either consciously or unconsciously, of the writings of others. As Emerson points out, even Shakespeare owed debts in all directions, for out of 6,043 lines in one play, 1,771 were written by some author before Shakespeare, 2,373 by him on the foundation laid by his predecessors, only 1,899 being entirely his own. It is the use that greatness makes of such material which gives the material greatness it did not before have, and it is in this that the value of great writing lies. Within the limitations of human language, nothing else is possible. Mrs. Eddy used what she found where she found it. Hegel and Swedenborg accommodated her with apt expressions, although they would undoubtedly have been surprised at the meaning she gave their words. Before Mrs. Eddy's advent, Anne Lee was the woman of the apocalypse to her followers, who called her Mother, referred to her foundation body of Shakers as the Mother Church, and began the Shaker version of the Lord's Prayer with, "Our Father and Mother, which art in heaven." While from Lindley Murray's English Reader, page 118, came most of what Mrs. Eddy has to say in Miscellaneous Writings, page 147, word for word, about the man of integrity. But lo, with what magic does she transform these obscure and previously moribund expressions? Whatever their original impulsion, the thought that now lies behind them vivifies and invests them with immortality. Because she was driven by the all-absorbing conviction that hers was a holy cause, Mrs. Eddy's use of what she found where she found it was not confined to her literary activities. For everything else and everyone else, and even herself, she used without hesitation to further her crusade. In this light, it is no mystery that she demanded unquestioning loyalty from her followers. For this meant loyalty to principle, as she saw it. So, it is with the hope that my husband's endeavor to paint with words an objective, accurate, and uninhibited portrait will place the heretofore enigmatical Mary Baker Eddy in true historical perspective, that this, his fondest work, goes forth.